Welcome to today's deep dive. If you're listening right now, we are so glad you're here.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for joining us.
Because we have a genuinely mind-bending topic to explore with you today. I mean, it is just wild. We are pulling from a really deeply, thoroughly researched article in the OETW Journal, and it's titled The Growing Brain: Psychedelics, Neuroplasticity, and the Dendritic Spine. And our mission for you today, what we really want to get into, is to help you understand this massive paradigm shift that's happening right now in neuroscience. It really is. We are fundamentally moving away from the old, familiar metaphor of a fixed brain that's just dealing with a chemical
Right,
imbalance.
that old model.
Yeah, and we're moving toward a totally new understanding of mental health,
Right.
one that views depression as a physical, like an actual structural collapse of the brain's architecture.
Yeah.
And more importantly, we are going to explore how certain molecules might literally rebuild that architecture in a single day.
Yeah, it really is a complete rewriting of the rules. I mean, for a long time, the scientific consensus, and honestly, the message passed down to the public, was that the adult brain was essentially a finished product.
Right, like you're stuck with it.
Exactly. We believed your neural wiring was laid down in your youth, cemented into place, and that was it.
Oh.
Sure, you could, learn a new route to work or remember a phone number, but you couldn't fundamentally alter the macroscopic or even microscopic structure.
Okay.
But the source material we're looking at, it proves that the static brain theory is entirely wrong.
Yeah.
The brain is constantly remodeling itself.
Right. And that completely changes how we talk about mental health. For decades, we've talked about depression using this really specific, almost plumbing-like vocabulary. We call it a chemical imbalance.
Yes,
Like your brain is just this complex soup. And if you were depressed, well, you just need a few more drops of serotonin in the broth to fix the recipe.
right, to just stir the pot.
Yeah. It makes the brain sound like a combustion engine that just needs a top up of oil.
Exactly. It's a very neat mechanical way to look at it. It implies this sort of fluidity and easy reversibility.
Yeah.
You just adjust the dials, balance the chemicals, and the system functions again.
But then you step into the world of modern neurobiology and you look at the actual physical structure of a brain under chronic stress, and suddenly that whole soup metaphor just completely falls apart.
It really does.
We aren't looking at a bad recipe anymore. We're looking at a collapsed building.
A collapsed building, and realizing that it is a structural collapse. Well, it changes absolutely everything about how we understand the adult brain's capacity to heal.
Right.
But, to understand how a building collapses and how we might rebuild it, we first have to zoom way, way in on the absolute smallest bricks of its foundation.
Okay.
We need to talk about the dendritic spine.
Okay, let's unpack this for the listener because visualizing this is so crucial. If a neuron in your brain is like a tree, the dendrites are the long branches reaching out in all directions.
Right.
So are the spines like tiny leaves on those branches trying to catch sunlight? Or, given that they are connecting to other cells, are they more like a physical handshake between two neighbors?
The handshake is the perfect analogy.
Okay.
Yeah, the source actually explicitly frames dendritic spines as the physical handshakes of thought.
Oh, wow. I love that.
It's a great image. There are these tiny, knobby protrusions, just a fraction of a micron across, which is, unimaginably small,
Right.
and they bristle all along those branches of the neuron, and they are the critical junction boxes of the mind.
Okay, so they're where the connections actually happen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Almost every excitatory synapse in your brain, meaning every single point where one neuron fires an active signal to excite another one, it lands exactly on one of these little
And
spines.
what's wild to me is that they aren't static. Like, it's not a permanent weld holding two pipes together. They are constantly
Oh,
moving.
they're incredibly dynamic.
Yeah.
The source details how they actually change shape based on your experiences.
Wait, really? Like, they physically change?
Yes, physically. They start as these thin, spindly little feelers. They're called filopodia.
Filopodia.
Right. And they're searching for a connection. When a synapse strengthens, when you learn something or experience something impactful, that thin feeler swells into a highly stable, mushroom-headed shape.
Wow.
This physical sculpting is the actual material substrate of your learning and memory.
That is just incredible to think about.
It is. When you master a piano chord, for example, somewhere in your motor cortex, spines have physically grown, swelled, and stabilized. they're the material record of your identity and your connections to the world.
Okay, so if dendritic spines are the physical embodiment of our connection to the world, that brings us to the dark side of this neuroplasticity, because the article talks about the structural signature of depression. Under chronic stress, neurons in the prefrontal cortex and the hippocampus, you know, the areas central to mood and self-regulation, they literally pull inward, they retract. The spines just wither away.
They do. The neurons don't necessarily die, but they shed the connections that link them to their neighbors.
So the handshake is broken.
Exactly. The physical handshake is broken.
Now, hold on. I want to challenge something here. Push back on this with me.
Okay, sure.
Neuroplasticity happens all the time, right?
Right.
If I learn a new language or if I memorize a sequence of numbers, my brain is growing spines.
Yes, it is.
So if the emotional flatness of depression is just a loss of spines, why doesn't doing a really hard crossword puzzle cure depression? Like, why doesn't normal learning just rebuild the building?
That is a brilliant distinction to make.
Oh, thanks.
The difference comes down to scale and location.
Okay.
When you learn a new phone number or do a crossword, the neuroplasticity is highly localized. You are growing a tiny, specific cluster of spines related to a specific task.
Right.
But the atrophy seen in chronic stress and severe depression is globalized across entire regions of the prefrontal cortex. It's an environmental collapse.
Oh, I see.
A crossword puzzle is like replacing a single doorknob in a house that just had its entire roof caved in.
Ah, okay. That makes perfect sense. The atrophy is widespread, so you need a widespread systemic intervention to force the entire region to start rebuilding.
Precisely. And for a long time, we just didn't have a good way to do that.
Right.
Conventional antidepressants, like SSRIs, they can slowly encourage some of this plasticity to return over a period of weeks or months.
Yeah, it takes a while.
But it is a very slow, gradual coaxing.
Which brings us to the fast forward button.
Yes.
If the building is collapsed, how do we pour a new foundation overnight?
Exactly.
This is where The Source introduces a landmark 2018 study by David Olsiger's team, the Lai et al. Paper. And this introduces a fantastic new vocabulary word for you listening.
It's a great word.
It is. Psychoplastogens.
Psychoplastogens, right.
These are molecules that rapidly and profoundly promote structural plasticity. They literally force the brain to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Olson and his team tested LSD, DMT, and a research psychedelic called DOI. And the statistic from the text that just blew my mind was that LSD nearly doubled the number of spines per length of dendrite.
It's staggering.
Right. It didn't just tweak the chemical soup. It caused an absolute explosion of new physical branches.
It's really staggering finding. And the field didn't just stop at looking at cells in a dish.
Right.
To really grasp the impact, The Source highlights a 2021 study led by Alex Kwan, the Shao et al. Study.
Yeah.
They wanted to see this in a living biological system.
Okay.
So using something called two-photon microscopy, they actually watched this structural rebuilding happen live in the brains of living mice.
Let's explain how they do that because, I mean, watching a brain grow sounds like science fiction.
It kind of is.
How do you see a micron-sized spine in a living animal?
It's an incredible technique.
Yeah.
They create a tiny microscopic window in the skull of the mouse.
A literal window.
A literal window. And they use neurons that have been genetically modified to glow with a fluorescent protein.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So by shooting a highly focused laser, that's the two-photon microscope, through that window, they can illuminate individual dendritic branches in the frontal cortex while the animal is alive and moving.
That is just wild. And what did they see when they gave the mouse a single dose of psilocybin?
Within just 24 hours, the spine size and density rose by roughly 10%.
A 10% increase in physical brain connections in one day.
Yeah.
If you scale that up, that is a frantic, massive pace of construction for any biological system.
It is an architectural boom. Hmm. But even more crucially, when they check back a month later, many of those newly formed mushroom-headed spines were still there.
No way. After a month.
After a month. A single dose of this psychoplastogen opened a window of physical rewiring that outlasted the actual drug's presence in the body by weeks.
That's incredible.
The animal's brain was physically denser with connections long after the chemical was totally gone.
Okay, but this is exactly where my skepticism kicks in, and it's a structural question.
Okay, let's hear it.
It's one thing to see a bunch of new bricks randomly slapped onto a house. It's another thing entirely to know if those new bricks are actually load-bearing, you know?
Right, right.
How do we know these new spines are actually doing anything? Do these new structures actually cure the depression? Or is this massive brain growth just a meaningless random side effect of a really intense drug?
That is the pivotal question of the entire paradigm shift.
Yeah.
Are the spines the cure or just a byproduct?
Exactly.
The cleanest, most undeniable answer we have comes from a 2019 study by Modus Asava and colleagues, which looked at ketamine.
Okay.
Ketamine, much like psychedelics, acts as a psychoplastogen and rapidly restores dendritic spines lost to stress.
So how did they prove the new spines were the load-bearing walls?
They used a highly advanced light-based technique called optogenetics.
Optogenetics.
Right. They essentially tagged only the newly formed dendritic spines with a special protein.
Okay, just the new ones.
Just the new ones. Then they waited until the ketamine had completely lifted the animals' depressive behaviors, so the animals were active, motivated, they were better.
Right.
At that exact point of recovery, the researchers shined a specific wavelength of light into the brain that caused only the newly tagged spines to shrink and disappear.
Wow. They selectively deleted just the new construction.
Exactly.
While leaving the old foundation totally intact.
Yes. And the result was undeniable. When those new spines were erased, the antidepressant effect collapsed entirely.
Oh my God.
The animals immediately relapsed into depression.
That is profound. So what does this mean for the fundamental theory of mental health?
It proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that structural plasticity isn't just an incidental side effect of the drug.
Right.
It is the core, vital mechanism of lasting healing. The new spines are the physical scaffold holding the improvement in place.
Okay, that makes so much sense.
The initial mood lift might happen for other chemical reasons, but sustaining that recovery requires the physical architecture to bear the load. If you grow the connections, the benefit endures. If you erase them, the healing slips away.
Okay, so if the physical spine is the cure, we have to talk about causality.
Sure.
I need to understand how a molecule floating around in the brain actually tells a neuron to start a major construction project.
Right, the mechanism.
Yeah. If we zoom all the way down, what does that molecular assembly line look like? How do we get from a chemical hitting a receptor to a physical spine pushing out of a branch?
It's an elegant microscopic cascade of signals.
Okay.
It starts when the psychedelic molecule binds to a very specific receptor on the neuron called the 5-HT2A receptor.
5-HT2A.
Right. That's a serotonin receptor, and it's the exact same one that we know drives the visionary, hallucinatory experience of a psychedelic trip.
Oh, interesting.
But instead of just altering perception, the source explains that this binding sends a signal deep into the interior of the cell.
It flips a master switch on the factory floor.
Right. Activating 5-HT2A triggers the release of BDNF, which stands for brain-derived neurotrophic factor.
BDNF.
Think of BDNF as the brain's premier fertilizer or growth signal.
Okay, so the fertilizer is released.
Right. Then BDNF binds to its own receptor called TORKB. And when TORKB is engaged, it switches on a pathway known as MTOR.
MTOR, mammalian target of rapamycin. I've actually seen that mentioned in longevity science, too.
Yes, exactly.
What exactly is MTOR doing in this context?
In this context, MTOR is the factory foreman.
Okay.
It is a master regulator of protein synthesis. When MTOR is activated, it literally takes amino acids floating around inside the cell and starts assembling them into structural proteins.
Oh, wow.
Primarily one called actin. Actin is the rigid physical scaffolding of a cell, kind of like the steel I-beams of a skyscraper.
Oh, this is the missing link. So MTOR is manufacturing these actin steel beams, and then what? It physically pushes the boundary of the cell outward.
Exactly. The actin filaments polymerize, meaning they link together and grow longer and longer, physically pushing the cell membrane outward into the synaptic cleft.
Oh.
Creating that new mushroom-headed spine we talked about earlier. It is a literal physical construction project driven by a chemical cascade.
That perfectly bridges the gap between the chemical and the physical.
Yeah, it really does.
But the source also mentions that this isn't just a quick build where the factory shuts down the next day. There was a 2021 study by De La Fuente Ravenga that looked at the long-term impact of this signaling.
Yes, and this is where the science gets even more astonishing.
Yeah.
That study showed that a single exposure to a psychedelic can produce prolonged epigenomic changes in the frontal cortex.
Okay, let's define epigenomic for the listener. That means it's actually altering how the DNA itself is being read, right?
Precisely. DNA is tightly spooled up in the nucleus of your cells.
Right.
Epigenomic changes mean the drug actually causes certain sections of that DNA to unspool, exposing specific genes so they can be read and turned into proteins.
Oh, wow.
The drug leaves the body in a matter of hours, but the epigenomic instructions it left behind keep the DNA unspooled.
That is why.
It is a molecular echo. The factory keeps running, which helps explain why one single therapeutic session can maintain structural changes for weeks or even months.
Okay, if that is the biological blueprint, this brings up the most fascinating debate in the entire field right now.
Oh yeah, the big one.
If this is all just a mechanical assembly line, you know, receptor to BDNF to MTOR to actin scaffolding, does the patient actually need to experience the psychedelic trip to get the brain growth?
Right.
If it's just cellular plumbing, can we just use a different chemical wrench that triggers MTOR but doesn't cause a massive reality-bending hallucination?
You've just hit on the exact debate dividing neuroscientists,
mm-hmm.
highlighted in the Calder and Hasler 2023 paper.
Okay.
Chemists are already building these. They've engineered non-hallucinogenic psychoplastogens, like a compound called tabernanthalog. Right. In animal models, these engineered molecules still trigger the MTOR pathway,
mm-hmm.
they still promote spine growth, and they produce antidepressant-like behavior in mice.
But no trip.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All without causing the head twitch response that indicates a psychedelic trip in rodents.
So they get the structural rewiring without the psychological voyage.
Exactly.
A purely physical software patch without needing to reboot the whole operating system.
That is the argument of one camp. But the other side of the field argues that humans are vastly more complex than mice.
Well, sure.
For a human being suffering from profound treatment-resistant depression, the subjective experience, the conscious insight, the emotional breakthrough, the confronting of deep trauma.
Right.
That might be therapeutic in itself.
Mm.
It might not be a side effect. It might be the mechanism by which the patient actually directs that new brain growth.
Oh, wow. So the experience guides the physical change.
That's the theory. The scientific community is fiercely debating whether you can separate the physical healing of the spines from the conscious experience of the trip itself, and we just don't have the human data to settle it yet.
And that leads us perfectly into the reality check portion of this deep dive, because listening to this, it sounds like an absolute miracle cure.
It does.
Just take a pill, trigger MTOR, build some load-bearing spines, and your depression is cured. But we have to look closely at the cautions and the context from the source material, because biology is never that simple.
No, it never is. And scientific caution is non-negotiable here.
Mm-hmm.
The most critical caveat from the source is that almost all of this direct spine imaging work, you know, the stunning visual proof of new spines growing, is preclinical.
Right. So mice and cells.
Exactly. It is done in rodents and in cell cultures. Mm-hmm. We simply do not have the neuroimaging technology yet to watch microscopic dendritic spines grow in a living, breathing human brain.
So saying this is exactly how human clinical recovery works is still a hypothesis.
Yes.
It is an incredibly compelling, highly educated guess backed by parallel evidence, but jumping from a mouse's cortex to a human's depression recovery is not a proven one-to-one fact.
Exactly. The overlapping evidence is massive. But we have to maintain that strict boundary between what we see in an animal model and what we can definitively prove in human reality.
There's another reality check here, and it has to do with how these tools are used. We always hear about set and setting with psychedelics.
Right, your mindset and your physical environment.
Exactly. If a drug is essentially a heavy-duty fertilizer that heightens neuroplasticity, it opens a window where your experiences write themselves very deeply into your physical brain structure, but more plasticity isn't automatically a good thing. What happens if this rapid rewiring is triggered in a brain that is currently in a chaotic, terrifying, or unsafe environment?
That is the great danger.
Yeah.
If you prime a brain to rapidly build new load-bearing walls, and you place that brain in a traumatic or unsupported context, the MTRR pathway doesn't know the difference.
Oh, wow.
It will just start building. You could inadvertently consolidate the wrong things. You might structurally reinforce fear, paranoia, or anxiety instead of healing.
That is terrifying.
It is. This is why the clinical environment, the integration therapy, and the psychological safety protocols are just as important as the molecule itself.
Which also highlights the physiological safety profile. The text is very impartial, but completely clear. I mean, these are not over-the-counter supplements.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
They're powerful, controlled substances.
Right.
They can significantly raise heart rate and blood pressure, which makes them unsafe for certain cardiac patients.
That makes sense.
And crucially, they can precipitate serious, lasting psychological harm in vulnerable populations, particularly those with a personal or family history of psychosis or schizophrenia.
Wow, okay.
The mechanism of action is profound, but it must be respected.
So bringing it all back to you, the listener, what is the ultimate takeaway of this deep dive?
Yeah.
For me, it's that massive shift in perspective we promised at the start. We are no longer looking at mental health as just balancing a chemical soup.
Right.
We are looking at the tangible possibility of coaxing a contracted, suffering brain to physically re-extend itself into the world.
I love that phrasing.
Thanks. Spine by spine, actin filament by actin filament, it completely transforms mental health from a fluid management problem into an architectural restoration project.
It is a fundamentally more concrete and, I think, more hopeful metaphor.
I agree.
But before we sign off, I want to leave you with a final provocative thought to mull over on your own.
Oh, I love these.
It builds on this idea of replacing the physical structures of your mind.
Let's hear it.
We've established that your dendritic spines are the material record of your learning, your memories, and your connections.
Right.
In many ways, the unique pattern of those millions of microscopic handshakes is your identity. It's what makes you, you.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, if a single dose of a psychoplastogen triggers a massive wave of erasing old atrophied spines and rapidly manufacturing millions of brand new ones in a single day, what happens to your sense of self?
Oh, wow.
It's a biological ship of Theseus. If you chemically wipe and replace the physical architecture of your past experiences to cure your depression, are you functionally waking up as a slightly different person?
Wow, that is going to keep me awake tonight.
That's a big question.
It really is. If you change the hardware that holds the software, does the software itself change?
Exactly.
It really makes you realize the profound weight of what this science is touching. We aren't just stirring a pot of soup anymore. We are tearing down and rebuilding the literal foundation of human consciousness.
Well said.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive, and we highly encourage you to keep thinking critically about the microscopic infrastructure of your own thoughts.